Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our minds for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast number 190. It's December, guys, and yes. It's chilly outside, and yeah. I don't like it.
It's mildly chilly in this very room in which we're podcasting, which is adjacent to the front of the store.
It's gray, it's cold, I don't care for it.
No, it's nice. It's nice. It's snug, and it's like it's icy and like frosty.
No, screw that. 72 sunny. That's what I want.
Have you not met Randy? He is
One of us is going to get our wish, and one of us ain't.
I mean, I think in the next week, it's just supposed to be in the 40s for low. Yeah. So it's not like we're getting chilled.
I'm going to guess that Randy doesn't feel that way about it.
That does not sound great to me.
I know.
Randy, have you considered a parka or one of those cool new Star Wars coats
for like for a week?
It's like
here's what you know I suggest. What? If
for those of us we're not like all like super warm blooded, you could probably wear a fairly warm coat for about a month and a half. I think.
Can't
or
do
one
it.
Of those cool Overwatch Christmas sweaters.
It's just not happening.
No. Embrace your cold.
I'm a little happy. I get to break out my Die Hard Christmas sweater that I bought last year.
Yeah.
I got a couple of them. I got a Lilo and Stitch. But I would rather have warm weather than sweater weather.
Hold on just a little bit. Uh-huh. In fact, we'll probably get some more warm weather before we get any seriously cold.
I mean,
weather.
On Christmas, it's probably going to be 90 degrees.
That's so true, and that's all I want.
I remember shorts and short sleeves like either last Christmas or the Christmas before.
Yeah, I know. I'm a monster. Anyway, at least we have comics this week.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good list, I think.
Yeah, we're going to talk about last week's comics a little bit, too, just because we did not get a chance last week. As you guys might remember, we did not have them.
Yeah, books were late.
Quite late.
Yeah.
And we were a little worried it was going to happen again, and we were very happy it didn't. All right, so real quick store news. As we close in on the end of December, this Saturday is our Ladies' Night Holiday Edition. Yep. So if you are a lady, come out and wear your ugly sweaters.
Yep.
And enjoy some Christmas frivolity and holiday frivolity with Tila and other folks.
Yes.
Then we have on Sunday, December 17th, we have the Arkham Horror Invocation, which is a organized play event for the Arkham Horror LCG. I believe there's room for four people. I think we have one spot taken, but the other three, as far as I know, are still clear.
Face your fears.
So come in. It's like a $5 buy-in, but you get like bonus cards and a playmat and all kinds of cool stuff out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And a chance to play Arkham Horror.
Definitely for people who have enjoyed that game, I would imagine it would be worth $5.
Yep. And then in January, we will have a pre-release for Rivals of Ixalan, the new Magic the Gathering. And we'll do a Gaming with Rogues, the Potion Explosion, which has a organized play kit as well. So there'll be kind of cool cards and stuff you get. So that's stuff to look forward to.
So wait, the new Magic set also has the word Ixalan in it?
Ixalan is the place.
The place, right. But I'm like, it's not... I thought they would usually do a different name or something.
I think it was the start of a new block, right?
They've done that before. Well, Ixalan is the first one called, and then it'll be Rivals of Ixalan, and then it'll be something else of Ixalan.
Buddies of Ixalan.
Buddies of Ixalan. All right, we got some news. Kerry Washington from Scandal.
Yeah.
And Rashida Jones from The Office and Angie Tribeca are teaming up to bring Boom's Goldie Vance to the screen. They're producing... So they're both producing, and Rashida Jones is going to direct.
It's kind of unexpected. Because, yeah. I mean, I liked Goldie Vance. It's a good book, and I think it sells well for us, but I didn't know if it's sort of over...
It feels like the kind of thing aimed at... Basically, Fox is trying to set up as a family film franchise.
I can easily see it being that.
It's written by Hope Larson, who did the graphic novel of Wrinkle in Time, who's writing DC's Batgirl. Artist is Brittany Williams, who did Patsy Walker. And it's about a 16-year-old mixed-race girl who dreams of becoming the in-house detective at a historic Miami resort. Or at least that's what this article says.
Yep.
And I really liked it. It's kind of fun and quirky and in their sort of boombox line. Yep. And I can totally see this working.
I'm trying to think what it would turn into as a movie incarnation. You know, like, what will they change? What will they beef up or tweak?
A lot more action scenes. A lot more two guns.
It's going to be sexier?
Yeah, Goldie Vance will come out with two guns and be like...
I'm the sexy hotel detective?
I don't think so.
Let's hope they don't go that far astray.
I'm just trying to figure out what the tone would be. Because, so at 16, she's like, probably right around there. They're not going to Riverdale it.
No.
Riverdale is sexy and tawdry.
No,
and I know they're not going
to
do that.
My guess would be it'll fall closer to something like Paddington Bear or something. Sort of like quirky and warm kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I'll be interested to see that. I think it's a good property for it, and I could see different directions they could go in, which are not tawdry.
Yes. Although, if she does have two guns, and blasts away at a bunch of hotel problems.
Right, like somebody who left a bunch of nasty towels on the floor. Yep. Like,
that's your last towel, pal.
Did you say Powell?
I was trying to rhyme. It didn't work.
I don't know. I thought it kind of worked.
I was trying to think. She needs a catchphrase. If she's going to have the two around, she has to have a catchphrase.
Checkout time.
Yes, that's it. That's definitely it. Yes.
And you've named the episode.
Yep, pretty much. That's quite possible. All right. We saw the Robin costume for the Titan show, which was surprising in that I guess he's going to be Robin, not Nightwing.
Right. I assumed because it was not Teen Titans, but Titans, I was kind of guessing Nightwing.
So this is Brenton Thwaites.
Sure.
He's from Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, which I didn't see.
Didn't watch that.
But he is going to be the head of this. The other thing about this is he's going to be... Titans is going to be on the DC streaming service.
Right.
Which they haven't officially announced yet.
No. But it's definitely the case, I believe.
Yeah, it is. It is that, Young Justice season 3.
Is it going to be sort of the flagship for it?
I think Young Justice and Titans, yeah.
Yeah, I had forgotten that, but when I read up on it, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Somewhat, I would say, based on the success of Discovery, Star Trek Discovery, that is.
Yeah.
That potentially bodes well in the sense that there's, it's, it's annoying that there's all these streaming services trying to vie for our attention. That's the elephant in the room.
Yes.
But if it's anything like Discovery, it does seem like they're like, they need it so bad to be a flagship that will get people on board it that they put good people on it.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe that'll happen with Titans, too.
This is a great-looking costume.
Yeah. Right. So this Robin costume is, the most faithful, real-world Robin costume I've seen, basically.
Yeah.
Looks basically like Tim Drake's costume.
It looks like the classic Neil Adams Tim Drake costume. He's even got the staff.
Yep. Is it possible? So one of my friends was making fun of his dude bro hair.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, he kind of does, but I mean, like, you only in the sense that
Tim Drake kind of had dude bro hair.
Yeah, he kind of did.
Is it possible this will be only used in flashbacks, and he will actually be Nightwing?
That's a lot of effort to put into one flashback costume. I don't think so. I think he's going to be Robin.
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be one flashback. It could just... that could be sort of the...
Is Cyborg going to be in this?
No, Cyborg is not in it because...
Because he's Justice League-ish now? Because
I think it's just...
But it's going to have Starfire.
And Hawk and Dove.
Hawk and Dove. Oh, interesting.
Hawk and Dove in, yeah.
And
it's almost more Titans West, because I remember...
Beast Boy, right?
I think Beast Boy might be in it.
Okay.
I don't remember. It was a weird team.
Well, Nightwing is very popular, and I could absolutely see them going with him, but it's also something, by the way, that you could save up for season 2 or 3
sure,
or whatever,
that's what I was thinking.
It would be super cool.
Yeah.
But more kids now at this point probably know Robin.
Yeah, Robin
because
is
of all
Teen
the
Titans.
Various Teen Titans cartoons.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, it's going to be a little bit weird in that I guess this will skew a little bit older.
Yeah.
You can only have somebody wearing that Robin costume for so long. Although, I take that back. What's his name from the Batman movies, the Schumacher movies? What was he, 30? He was, 30 or something as Robin.
And I think there was an older Robin in the video game, right? In the Arkham City?
Yeah, that's true. I guess you just may muscle him the hell up.
Also, keep in mind, the Teen Titans cartoon premiered in 2003.
Right.
So that was 14 years ago.
Those kids are all grown up, and they're ready for their... They're ready to see a grown-up Robin and Starfire and stuff.
Yeah,
I can see it.
Yeah.
I bet they hold out for Nightwing for the finale or season 2 or 3 or something.
I bet so, too.
But it looks great. I have to say that the costume looks awesome.
I'm just saying, if they're that faithful to that, I want a faithful Disco Nightwing. I want the collar and the long hair. Well,
I believe you and Jarek will be the two people lobbying for that.
All right. In weird news, Quentin Tarantino is developing a Star Trek movie with J.J. Abrams.
Is it actually in development?
Basically, Tarantino sold Paramount on a, quote, great idea that he had for a Star Trek movie.
Which sounds to me like they were at a bar and he's like, you know what would be neat? And he said some Star Trek idea.
The studio is now assembling a writer's room that will try to turn his great idea into an actual movie. Assuming that works out well, Tarantino might even stick around to direct. That sounds like speculation from the person writing the article.
Yeah. Me too.
It's a very clickbaity article.
Yeah, I think so. I think Star Trek probably doesn't mind their name being, they don't mind some clickbaity stories about their properties.
Honestly, the whole reason this is so successful as an internet story is it leads to any number of jokes about Samuel Jackson as the captain,
right.
Quentin Tarantino and How many bad curse words are going to be thrown away around on the Enterprise.
Right. Hey, Randy, let me ask you. What does Captain Picard look like?
Yeah.
He's bald.
He's French.
Yeah. Does he look like...
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's really all we need is the hours and hours of Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, other Tarantino jokes around Star Trek.
Yeah.
I thought this was this is what he's working on, and that made me a little bummed because I'm like, Tarantino's only going to make me so many movies. He's already making this Manson movie I don't want him to make.
Yeah.
And releasing it in the most awful way possible.
Yeah.
Like, there is no way he should be making that movie.
Yep.
And so I was like, oh, he's going to follow it up with Star Trek? No, that's no good.
It might be a Tarantino movie I don't see.
Yeah. There won't be a Tarantino movie.
But I don't think he's going to direct it. But here's the thing. I think that if somehow he did end up directing it, I don't think it'd be what people are envisioning.
Yeah.
I think he would rein it in. It would be, I presume, like, do we presume that this would be like with the current cast?
No idea. I mean,
I do like that all that casting and stuff like that, but I kind of thought now that they had done three and that there didn't seem to be a lot of immediate plans, I sort of thought they might be kind of done.
Me too.
Yeah, I think a lot of their contracts are up. I know, like, guy who plays Spock, and he only had like three.
Zachary Quinto,
yeah.
I guess the crazy thing is, like, if they were going to do this, and if they were going to, like, let's go go down that path for a minute. If Tarantino actually directed it, reined himself in, but did go in some Tarantino-esque directions, you know, made it conversational, a little bit more vulgar, we've already seen it in Discovery.
Yep.
Then what if they just did it like a new crew?
I would love that. This would make me sad for Tarantino, because, like I say, it's not what I want him spending his time on his original stuff, not licensed property.
Trek fiction.
That said, it would make me happy for Trek, because I'd be curious to see what that looked like.
Right. See, in my way, like, the Abrams movies, while fun, and Abrams and whoever the other guy was, Jeremy Lin?
Justin Lin.
Well, fun enough, also are kind of not Trek.
Yeah.
So... I don't care if they screw him up. I'm like, yeah, dude, bring in Tarantino, bring in whoever. Bring in Woody Allen. I don't care, all the controversial directors.
What if he wanted to do a Next Generation movie? He's like, I want to do a Next Generation.
I don't think he would, because I think that's past his point of nostalgia, honestly. Yeah. But yeah, sure, why not? And, you know, at some point they're going to do their Abrams-verse type Next Generation.
Yeah.
I half wondered if they were going to get to it sooner rather than later if the current franchise falters. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see another ship or something like that done with him. I am curious also to know what was his great idea. Was it just some kind of a, you know, high concept? You know, like if you take the Genesis device and you know, or like, and kind of explain that and like... Is that all he did? Was he just said, what if this happened, and wouldn't it be cool if?
I think that is entirely what it is. Yeah. It's like a drunk at a bar, here's a great idea.
Yeah. But I'm curious. Yeah, like, I'll be curious to just see where it goes.
Sure. There is a new Batman Ninja anime. Did you guys watch the trailer for this?
Yeah, yeah. It looked kind of cool.
It looks kind of cool.
There's a part of me that's like, I'm kind of tired of the Joker. But he's such an anime-type villain that how could they not use
especially him? Especially in this one, yeah. I mean,
you know, they like their kind of... And sort of androgynous, cruelly intelligent villains. It's such a thing in anime.
It's a weird mix of like actual like samurai stuff though, and like high tech cars.
Right.
And
it seems clear that this is a time travel element. Batman of the present goes back to samurai times.
Okay. All right.
I've read that so in the
that
article
makes
at some
a lot
point.
More sense.
And it looked like there's a Catwoman in there who I don't know if is present day Catwoman gone back or a Catwoman of samurai times. Right. And I thought I glimpsed in the background a Robin or two, even, which was an interesting notion. I almost wish it had just been, like, re-envisioned Elseworld-style Batman is like, a Ronin or whatever. And
right.
Those are his, like, apprentices, the Robins.
Blade of the Immortal starring Batman.
Something like that.
Well, I mean, the talent on this is pretty impressive. Like, they had people from, like, Afro Samurai and... with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, like they put a lot of talent on this, so I'm curious about it. I'm not the biggest anime fan in the world, but this was a solid trailer.
You know, I saw this article, it was either from BuzzFeed or Huffington Post, both clickbaity type places, and it said something like, you know, oh, I think it was Huffington Post, like, Japan is doing Batman better than America these days, and they just, like, jumped on it so hard because of the trailer, and I think it was all because, you know, just a little bit of backlash against Affleck's Batman, really, but I'm like, Tom King is writing a very well-liked Batman right now. Batman is at the center of DC's, like, most popular crossover, the DC Metal. And Scott Snyder, who's had a hugely successful run, continues to do Batman projects.
Yeah.
So, like, Batman is not exactly atrophying.
Yeah, it's not faltering. Yeah.
Yeah. But this looks visually neat. It looks like it's going to be a cool ride. More interesting to me than most of the DC original movies, honestly.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see what they do.
So, Wolverine and Marvel are getting into podcasts. They're launching a 10-episode season, Wolverine the Long Night.
Is Wolverine, is he the host as he investigates quirky murder cases?
Yeah. It's Wolverine's going to do a 10-part expose on the Weapon X project.
Click and subscribe, bub.
I thought it was an interesting idea.
Yeah, so follows a pair of agents on the trail of a serial killer in Alaska, and Wolverine is the main suspect.
Interesting. He is not the lead character,
per se? Sounds like he's not. I mean, he's voiced by Richard Armitage, so he's in there.
Who's Richard Armitage?
He's best known for his role as Thorin Oakenshield in The Hobbit.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, he's good. Wait, that guy is very British.
I don't assume it'll be British Wolverine, but who knows?
I guess he's gonna have to turn off his accent.
He's definitely a known guy, so this is definitely them throwing some money.
He's a talented actor. Yeah. I actually think he's kind of in his gravelly way would be good for it.
They've also got 30 Rock Scott Adsit, Bob Balaban from Seinfeld and Christopher Guest movies, and Brian Stokes Mitchell from Mr. Robot. Other cameos. They're gonna have full sound effects and all that kind of stuff.
I kind of like the idea in a way.
It's written by comic writer Ben Percy, who does like Green Arrow and a few other things for DC. I'm curious.
The closest we've seen is like the Bright Sessions, which deals with like sort of almost more sci-fi-ish, but a slightly more sci-fi-ish take on superpowers.
Not unlike what as the good versions of Heroes, the good season.
Exactly. And so but a podcast that's like straight up, in the Marvel universe. I'm going to guess they're not going to go too far with it. It's going to feel more like it's probably in the X-Men movie-verse, if I had to guess, or a little bit more like that.
But if this is sort of a pilot program where maybe they could do more, I'd be for that.
Yeah. There's a part of me that's like, I wish it wasn't Wolverine. But...
Yeah, sure.
But I actually see that as a pretty approachable genre. I kind of even like the idea of people looking into it who and him not being the lead. That sounds like an interesting way to do it.
Yeah. Finally... The Disney Fox deal is inching ever closer.
Yeah, it sounds like it's within view, like it's visible on the horizon.
Yeah, like maybe even next week.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
We were talking about it earlier. It's like, oh, so that was might be wave three.
Last week I think we were kind of joking, and I looked up and found an article that was Kevin Feige, I don't know,
Feige
had 20 more movies planned.
Yeah, if he's thinking, or if that list includes all the X-Men properties, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Fantastic Four too, right?
Yeah, Fantastic Four and X-Men.
I mean,
you know what we were talking about? Like, they could set this up, of course, with the Infinity stuff.
If they know they're getting it.
I'm
sure that's why they're pushing for this.
Like deal. Nick pointed out, like, what if the Infinity Gauntlet, some aspect of it, creates mutants or
reorients the universe? Really, I mean.
Yeah, I'm actually mildly fearful of that because I don't want it to be a thing where, like, you're supposed to imagine things are different from how the movies portrayed them.
Right.
I'd rather the FF just kind of come about maybe through the tail end of, it'd be at the tail end of the Avengers Infinity War stuff and, become the, our vanguard or Earth's vanguard in space or some, they find some way to then lead into it.
Right.
But I guess everything's potentially on the table, including that kind of reality warping with the Infinity Gauntlet around.
Yeah. I mean, there are major real-world implications to this whole deal, and we're not going to talk about that. That's all depressing. But but the upside...
You're just talking about the mega conglomerate
stuff. The upside of the mega corporations that are going to rule all our lives is that we will maybe have the X-Men in the Marvel Universe.
Yep. Yeah, but we'll be living life like in Sea Guy.
Yeah,
Grant Morrison's Sea Guy. Everything will be controlled by what is it, Mickey Eye or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I'll just go get my.
He was right.
I'll go get my talking fish. What was
Chubby the Tuna?
Chubby the Tuna, and
with Chubby the Tuna and Claws from this week, which also
does have that as well.
Also, Grant Morrison has a little bit of an anti-corporate stand there.
Shocker!
It'll all be okay.
It's all gonna be okay.
And yet. Not more of an anti-corporate feeling than Alan Moore does.
That's Charlie Chan.
All right, that's all the news for us. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, December 6th, as well as comics for last week, because last week was a crazy fifth week. So there were some annuals and a couple other new books, and they were just sprinkling them in there. I don't think we have any picks from that last week, do we?
Well, I had one thing that stood out for me, that Batman special.
Yeah.
That would almost certainly be a pick, but we can just, I think, drop it in when we're flashing back to these.
All right. So I'm going to start this week. For me, this is this week was a little lighter, but several favorites of like stuff that I've been enjoying. The second issue of Mark Waid and Chris Samnee's Captain America, issue number 696, because that's how we're doing things now, is really, really good, and I actually think in some ways better than the first one. It is doing something similar to what the first one did, which is sort of a Cap is going across America, getting in touch with the real folks, and everywhere he goes, there happens to be supervillains.
You're living in the Marvel Universe.
Yep. So, this one he goes to a small town, and he actually, this thing is not a small town, it's sort of outside of Atlanta. It's, he's sort of looking for a small town to call his base of operations, I think.
Yep.
And he gets there, goes into this diner, and is like, yeah, I'll wash some dishes in exchange for some food. And immediately they recognize him, like, hey, you're Steve Rogers.
Yep.
And, people start taking pictures, and they call the news. And the sort of kindly owner of the diner runs everybody else out and tries to give Cap some privacy. And they sort of talk about small town life and that kind of thing. And it's nice to see, I think, in this time of turmoil, Nick Spencer did what I think he thought people might want with Cap, which is a sort of a very political, very look at the dangers of nationalism, look at social issues and that kind of thing. And in fact, I think at this particular time, what we really need is maybe just basic decency is still out there.
Right.
And so this is basic decency Cap, going out, talking to people, fighting crime, and doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, weirdly, I suppose right now, mm-hmm. a hero being true to themselves, being like a true hero, seems like a bold statement.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, right, people can be honorable and
what's
that?
This is exactly what I wanted out of Cap, and even though I really like the Sam Wilson stuff, I really, really think that what Waid and Samnee are doing here, sort of classic Captain America, that it has something to say. It's definitely a product of post-Trump America. It is relevant to today.
But it's not steeped in that.
And they do a cool thing where Cap faces down with a classic villain.
Yeah, I liked the classic villain in it. I mean, if only to see Chris Samnee draw him.
Yep.
Kind of unashamedly in the classic costume, which sometimes when you get a really good artist, like an old school costume that might otherwise be a little bit silly or whatever, it still looks badass. Yeah.
And there's also some funny stuff between like Cap and the diner owner and stuff. So it's a really good issue, and it turns out to be exactly what I wanted in Captain America.
Uh-huh.
Dave, what's your pick?
My first pick is a book from Image called Sleepless. It's a new fantasy series, which when I was making signs for it, they outright described it as a fantasy romance series, but that's kind of more of an undercurrent in the first issue. We'll see where it goes. Right now, it feels more like a kind of sort of a lighter weight story about a girl who's dealing with a sort of succession after her. She's like the illegitimate daughter of the king, and there's a succession issues. And an interesting thing with her bodyguard, which okay. is, I think, where that'll go. So anyway, the writer is Sarah Vaughan, who we know from Alex and Ada, which we really loved.
Yep. And then that Dead Man romance series.
Right,
I liked.
Right. She did that sort of Dead Man gothic romance mystery
and
sort of series.
Just recently, didn't they do Eternal Empire?
Yeah, it? And that was one that we, like, I want to read that now that it's in trade. But the first issue was not a grabber, so I was not immediately inclined to think, oh, she, and that was a fantasy series. I was like, oh, Sarah Vaughan is going to write the hell out of this book. But as it happens, I quite liked it, and a big contributing factor is also this art by Leila DeLuca.
She's done a bunch of stuff.
I'm sorry, Del Duca.
She's done like Shudder.
Okay.
And that Afar graphic novel.
Yeah.
She's a really good artist.
She is intensely good in this, and I suppose one of the nice things about it, I'll just mention off the bat, is that the lead character is black and beautifully rendered with. You know, it is not just the old cliche of a Caucasian person, darkly colored.
Right.
She has beautiful features, and the costuming in this is amazing. Honestly, it's one of the best drawn books I've seen the entire year, and it begins with her in mourning for her father and sort of preparing for the coronation of the king's brother. I'm not quite sure how the line of succession stuff works. There's some kind of concern that she might have a claim to it, even though she's illegitimate, but it's not something she seems interested in pressing. And for the moment, things are a little bit lighter in it, as she's protected by a bodyguard who's... What do they call it? I mean, I guess he's sleepless?
The sleepless.
Yeah, and it seems like he literally does not sleep. Like, there may be a magic thing where he's, like, sort of perpetually on guard for her. She also has a cool little foxy creature that reminds me a whole lot of the little foxy creature in Nausicaa.
Hmm.
But there is some violent, and so you see some of the political stuff going on. You see some stuff with her mother, and questions of what she's going to be doing next now in her life. It's serious, but not weighty. It's not quite like, it's not Game of Thrones level serious, but it's also not completely light fantasy adventure. So it's somewhere in between.
I really enjoyed this issue too. Yeah. One of my favorite things is the subtle world building that is involved throughout the issue, because it's not a here is our city, here is it's told.
They don't ever say here is what a sleepless knight is, even though that is what he is.
It's told through actions and little things, nods.
There's interesting visual iconography. He's got this cool what do you call it? Like a brooch thing? Mm-hmm. Is that like the king's hand? What do they call
Hand of the King from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, they have that, but it's cool. He's got like a little dagger pin, but it has like it goes through like a metal eye, which I'm sure is an open eye because it's sleepless. There's all sorts of interesting visuals on the tombs that are in there. Like, it feels as if the artist has also been thinking about the world.
But there's also magic and ghosts and kind of manner of, like, enchanted objects.
Mm-hmm.
It's just some really cool staples that we have in fantasy, but told in kind of a unique way.
Yep, and a cool action sequence in it, too.
Yeah.
And I like both the characters. There's not a great deal to them immediately, but I like both the lead and her bodyguard. It was right out of the gate. And so this feels like a series I will be keeping up with. It's also got an awesome cover, which will kind of pop for its beautiful design. It reminds me a little bit of the sort of Art Deco fantasy look of the way back in the 90s, Charles Vess did that Book of Ballads and Legends, where he would adapt in sort of fantasy comic form the old English ballads and stuff, or folk tales. Anyway, really strong kickoff for Sleepless. Nick, what do you got?
Well, it's another
fantasy.
Yeah, it's another year, another Christmas. Therefore, we must have a Klaus or a Claus one shot from Grant Morrison.
Yeah. We all know it's Claus. We prefer to pronounce it Klaus.
Yes,
I mean it's just kind of a thing that way. I was just going to quick say, like, he, 2 years ago, I guess, did his miniseries, sort of, which is now a nice graphic novel.
It may have been 3 years ago, because that did run for about 7 or 8 months.
Oh, right. Really? Is it that long?
We were trying to figure that out, but I think so. But yeah, it was a series called Claus, which is kind of it was almost like a barbarian fantasy Santa Claus Year One.
Yeah.
But that was sort of his lead into a concept that he always said he considered his sort of, so truly a Santa Claus Year One in the superhero sense, where... After that initial sort of origin story, he would do follow-up projects that would be set in and around different eras of his career and speak as if there had been a Santa Claus comic, action comic, that had been going on for, like, decades, you know, in which you might hear about old adventures all the time.
Yeah, this has references back to sort of Silver Age Santa battles with one of his villains, and then it feels like a superhero comic.
And that is sort of what it is. I mean, it's Santa Claus is a superhero, and that's as concepts go, that's Grant Morrison, and it's fun.
He's still kind of a bit of a barbarian superhero. Sword wielding. His sleigh is drawn by wolves in this,
he's comparable to someone like Thor.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It's like Santa Thor.
He's based on a real religious figure, but he is a it's through a superhero paradigm.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I suppose in a weird way, like Darren Aronofsky's Noah.
Yeah.
Which Tolkien'd up the Bible. So Nick, but it begins with kind of a more human mystery, right?
Well, yes. This one is called Claus and the Crisis in Xmasville.
It is specifically Xmasville, as the story will later explain.
Yes, there is a point to that. And yes, it does start out with sort of a family driving on a family trip and ultimately ending up in a place they did not expect to.
Right. I mean, I think we could say it's kind of a creepy, you know that tradition of people driving through a weird small town?
Yeah.
This is a weird small town that's everything is Santa and Christmas themed, because it's like they wanted to make like a theme park town. By
the
way,
what I love, they tie in the bad guys to sort of this whole thing that, you know, Coca-Cola, there's all, like, did Coke actually create Santa as a concept?
No, but like in the early 20th century, I think they had Norman Rockwell do all those, you know, people drinking Coke around the holidays, these very picturesque scenes. It's like they might have copyrighted it, but I think it might have been more that they...
But didn't they create like the modern Santa? Like,
yeah, I think the image that we have, that, and I think the Twas the Night Before Christmas poem by whoever that was, sort of solidified it. But yeah, there may actually be a historical thing behind this where they
tie that in here pretty well.
Basically, modern Santa equals Coke.
Yeah,
they run into a town called Xmasville, and it is the home of Pola Cola.
Yes,
which is
like Polar Cola. Is that what it is?
Or Coca-Cola?
Yeah,
but
it's Pola.
It is Pola, and kind of goes from there, bringing in some kind of fantastical elements.
And a great bad guy.
Klaus does show up.
Yes.
And we get sort of classic good versus evil craziness. I don't want to reveal too much because these are so much fun.
Yeah. Well, and the art's really good.
It's Dan Mora who's been with him from the beginning, right?
There's some sort of sweet moments in it, like you get that sort of like uplifting Christmas. Like, this is the kind of Christmas special I want. I was very happy with this.
And
I love Claus, but I don't love it as much as you guys do. Like, I didn't buy the hardcover or anything.
Right. But it is that mixture of like kind of like there is both holiday spirit and it's also badass.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are tons of references that are like, oh, that's totally a Morrison thing. And
Yeah, there were a few lines in there that cracked me up because they were so Morrison-like, you know. There's like giant epic sword fights and crazy alien stuff.
Yeah.
References to Santa's previous adventures, which at one point he mentions battling the Martians, and he said it was 20 years prior. This was set in the mid-80s.
Yep.
Sort of a big Reagan-y commercial boom boom period. I believe that Santa Claus Conquers the Martian movies would have been made about 20 years prior to that.
Yeah, I believe it was referenced.
I believe he's sort of making it out that's, if not canonical in there, is like sort of like this kind of thing he's like that his Claus would do.
Right, yeah.
But his wolf is back, Lily. There's some cool stuff with other kind of big gun Christmas characters.
Yeah, that was he kind of does some neat mythologizing with somebody who's even a little bit bigger than Claus.
What's funny to me, Dave, is you know, occasionally you will run a Christmas-themed RPG that's
right.
It involves all the misfit toys and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sort of Rudolph style.
Sort of shared world.
Can you write a Klaus?
This feels like that to me. It's like
it does.
A once a year check in on this sort of fun Christmas world.
Yeah. Well, there, you know, everybody tries to do sort of holiday specials, and I think I'm sure we'll bring it up, but DC even did a pretty good holiday special this week. But there's not quite like an original property where you can kind of revisit each Christmas, you know, in that kind of fun holiday spirit sort of way.
Yeah.
Except Claus.
Yeah, Claus is becoming the one I'm going to look forward to every year.
Yep. Because you're like, what strange thing is he going to end up fighting this year?
Yep.
I'm going to guess that next year, giant hallucinating toads.
That's possible. Grant Morrison fights that every day.
He doesn't fight it. He lives with it.
Nick, what's your backup?
So I'm cheating a little bit because I'm going to choose two backup books, both of which are Batman.
Okay.
One is this week, Batman 36, and one is last week's Batman Annual. Because they're both fantastic. The annual is sort of a Selina Kyle focus about Batman and her kind of where they first found out they were romantically attracted to each other. And then a final story of sort of a final...
I assume that's the point at which Catwoman swung by.
Yeah.
No, there's a little bit more...
Interesting.
It starts out with Catwoman breaking into the Batcave and stealing the Batmobile.
Sounds memorable.
Yep. And then the final story is sort of about their final days together, and it is sort of this emotional gut punch that I was not expecting, but Tom King wrote
kind of like a hypothetical
how
their lives could go kind of thing.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it was sweet and touching and really kind of hit me a little harder than I was expecting. But it just kind of shows sort of the emotional punch that King can occasionally pull out. And
let me ask you this, Nick.
Uh-huh.
How many horses are murdered?
I knew that was going to come up. There were no animals hurt. There were animals used. There were little mice that Catwoman would leave for him.
Okay.
Dead mice?
No, not dead mice.
That's what cats
mice.
Do, though. It's what they do.
That's right.
It's how they show affection.
Yep. Here, Batman, here's a bunch of dead mice.
Kiss me.
And then this week, Batman 36, no horses were killed.
This is another sort of, this is kind of another heartwarming story in its way.
It is. It's sort of...
and character analysis.
It's all about the relationship between Batman, or Bruce Wayne, and Clark Kent.
And the first time they found themselves attracted to one another.
Yes. No.
And then Clark Kent brings him a bunch of dead mice.
No, because it's... Bruce doesn't want to talk to... Or doesn't want to talk to Clark about getting married.
His pending nuptials.
And Clark doesn't want to talk to Batman because he expects Batman to call him. And
they are both talking to their significant others.
Yeah.
Lois and Catwoman. Or Selina. About this
And
this
just
sort of
the back and forth between them. It's very interesting, and it's kind of that weird couple relationship that it's, you're kind of looking in and seeing their kind of paradigms.
It reminded me of a slightly more sophisticated version of sort of, in a way, what Loeb would do, the way he would kind of intercut stuff in the old Superman-Batman issues from about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Of kind of juxtaposing their worlds. This one's, I think, kind of seemed to me like kind of cut to the characters a little bit more, which is what King does.
Yeah. I mean,
there was fewer crazy Silver Age composite Superman Batman robots in it.
It's true. I mean, Superman's still doing very...
I mean, fewer by 100%.
Yeah.
Superman's doing Superman things. He's still saving the day, but they're also acknowledging...
Well, this has that kind of superhero trope of, because their day job is, like, fighting and punching big stuff, they sometimes carry on casual conversations while they're doing it. Mm-hmm. It's like being on the phone while you're driving, except you're fighting a giant robot or something.
Yeah. But also, we get to see Clark Kent in sort of, like, a reporter mode, which... Mm-hmm. And I love kind of his... The art in this is spectacular by Clay Mann.
Yeah, he did a really good job in it.
And I like reporter mode Clark Kent. It's very kind of classic.
Yep.
But it's just... It was a good issue. It was one of those kind of heartwarming issues where...
Well, it sort of leads to a big reveal about, like, kind of how the two of those guys lens each other and sort of maybe... I can see this being a touch... You know how people will use as a touchstone that Garth Ennis issue of Hitman that had Superman in it?
Uh-huh.
They'll always talk about how it kind of defines Superman as the ultimate immigrant story and stuff like that. This one, I think people maybe a bit of a touchstone as far as how Batman and Superman conceptualize each other.
Yeah.
I can see people going back and talking about it a lot.
Hmm.
Dave, what is your alt pick?
Speaking of things that people go back and talk about, Watchmen, probably the most analyzed comic of all time.
Uh-huh.
There is a giant coffee table book that came out this week that is one that I had been had on order since forever, and it finally came in. It's a big old $50 hardcover called Watchmen Annotated, and that is exactly what it is.
By the way, this is maybe the best idea for a Christmas present for anyone under your who's a comics fan on your list.
That's absolutely true. If somebody would just write me a check as my own present here. Oh, you meant for other people.
Other people.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
It is the season of giving.
Yeah.
Sorry, I went all comedian there. This is the entire Watchmen 12-issue miniseries in black and white. I'm guessing probably like maybe for cost reasons, but also probably for clarity
show
of imagery.
Yeah.
So you can really zero in on Dave Gibbons's artwork. And then wide margins on either side of the pages that have breakdown on a, like, sometimes panel-by-panel basis, the detail that went into it. I was joking with Nick and Randy earlier that I was, like, a little worried that it would just be saying things like, oh, yeah, the Pale Horse Band is based on the biblical Pale Horse, Pale Rider quote. And I'd be like, yeah, I knew that.
You thought it was going to be the pop-up video of
yes,
annotation.
Yes, and I'm like, that could have some merit, but... This goes into much greater depth. It's pulling Alan Moore quotes from interviews elsewhere. It has some interesting thoughts that even, like, it notices things that even I had missed. And, you know, Watchmen is a book that, that is so intricately detailed and planned that it's easy to have missed stuff, but it's, like, crazy how much stuff there is still defined in it at times. So I find myself always going back to it. This looks to be 100% worth its $50 price point. Even the text pages are annotated in it. You know, and in a way, you're getting just a cool black and white version of Watchmen where you can just, you know, that alone would maybe be worth it just to see the art in black and white. Not unlike, even though it doesn't have the pencil and stuff, but not unlike those, what do you call the artist edition?
Yeah.
And then there's just tons and tons of annotations. So I will be, this is pretty good because of Doomsday Clock. I've been in the mood to revisit Watchmen, and now I will revisit it with the big ol' annotated reading, I think.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, I'm ecstatic about it, and every Watchmen fan should get it, and stop being a dum-dum.
Well, that turned harsh at the end.
You know, just a little bit.
So my backup pick is a book I keep picking, X-Men Gold, number 17. This sends the X-Men into the Negative Zone because Kitty Pryde and Nightcrawler have been accidentally kidnapped by this bad guy who showed up as part of the Brotherhood, who turns out to be sort of an alien dictator who is trying to take over the world. And so they go in to get their people. They get a Negative Zone costumes and a Negative Zone ship designed for them by Forge.
I want Negative Zone costumes.
They are sent in there by the Blue Marvel. We had somebody asking about the Blue Marvel. What happened to that guy?
Yeah.
He is like their scientific consultant. And they send him through this portal. And then also we see Cecilia Reyes, another not-seen-for-a-while mutant, checking in on the wounded Rachel Gray. So there's lots of little characters in here. They also take someone named Ink, who I guess is like a minor league telepath, because Rachel's down and they need a telepath.
Somebody who has done their research.
Yeah, it's and then amongst that, it's got the classic team of Wolverine, Storm, Colossus. They go to this alien world. They quickly find themselves in the middle of an alien civil war. There's some great action. There's a great scene where Nightcrawler references being trapped by Dr. Doom in this place that he can't see anything, so he can't teleport out.
Man, that was like in X-Men, like 140-something.
Yep.
That was a long time ago.
And they do a riff on it, and they do a good job of it. And yeah, this just, it feels like this is an X-Men book for people who've read and loved X-Men.
I got a little bit behind, but just because they referenced that story, which, by the way, was a cool thing.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows the deal. I'm just going to quick mention. Nightcrawler kind of needs to tell, he can only teleport places he's been with accuracy, generally. And Dr. Doom trapped him in this featureless room at one point where he had no idea what was outside of it. And so any teleport he made was going to be a blind teleport where he could end up in a wall.
Which he would kill him, yeah.
Yeah. And it was like this perfect simple trap, just put him in a featureless room.
And so to escape, he teleported as high above himself as he could.
Yeah, he ends up like above, like, it's like in like the stormy cliffs outside of, like, was it in Scotland or something like that? And anyway, Nightcrawler had to do all this kind of crazy stuff to like slow his descent. I think that might have been the first time he did the bamfing in like sort of multiple ones to sort of slow his descent or whatever. And, you know, and I'm sure he was like, strain, nearly killing me. Kind of thing.
Ungla Beach!
But it was cool.
Anyway, they do a good riff on it, and the other thing that Guggenheim is doing here is when he references these things, it is not just a cheap reference of a nudge-nudge, hey, remember this?
Yeah.
He uses it for the story.
Right.
Alright, also on my list this week, Avengers 674 is a conclusion to the Avengers Champions crossover, although it's going to have an epilogue in the Champions, and man, there's a big thing that happens in this issue.
Yeah, what is it?
I'm not going to tell you. But it was really good. It's a heavy focus on Viv Vision. And Hawkeye number 13 is the start of Family Reunion, which puts both Hawkeyes together on the trail of Kate's missing mom. And I love watching Kate and Clint interact.
I meant to read that one.
And it was really fun. Killer Be Killed number 14 is our greatest show of Killer Be Killed. And,
That was last week. That was good stuff.
Because it was last week and Dave didn't pick it, I mention it.
I forgot about it.
I know.
I forgot about Dre.
The Fix number 10 is the return of that comedic crime book by Lieber and Spencer. Doctor Strange 382 is the next part of the Donny Cates Loki as Sorcerer Supreme. Iron Fist 75 is more of Iron Fist and Sabretooth teaming up to track down the... they're tracking down somebody who's trying to purify Kunlun, basically.
Yep.
Spirits of Vengeance number 3 continues the that story of the magic characters of the Marvel Universe. And Astonishing X-Men number 6 wraps up the first story arc in a very interesting fashion with some things that are going to have some things to say about what Xavier's status quo is going forward. And then I want to mention Batman Creature of the Night number one, also from last week. This is Kurt Busiek, John Paul Leon. We talked about the Superman Secret Identity. This is sort of the spiritual successor to it.
Okay, in prestige format miniseries.
Yeah, it is a little kid who's named Bruce Wainwright, whose parents are killed in a robbery, and he's always been kind of obsessed with Batman because of his name is Bruce Wayne, and it seems like maybe there is a Batman-like creature that he may have something to do with, tracking down the people who killed his parents.
I think the key thing is that, like Secret Identity, it's meant to really be set in our world.
Yeah.
And yet the fiction of DC is intruding on their world, but in a different way than Secret Identity.
Yeah, I like this. I didn't like it as much as Secret Identity, but I thought it was an interesting first issue.
I thought it was a very strong first issue. I think it has the potential to be as good as Secret Identity. I think it just... I'll need to read the rest of the story to see. I thought it was interesting that instead of sort of gaining overtly gaining like the abilities of Batman, it's almost more like he's summoning him.
Yeah.
And yet sort of seeing through his eyes.
Yeah.
It was an interesting spin on it.
A lot of trades this week. The Whiteout Compendium, which collects both the Whiteout series from Greg Rucka and Steve Lieber. This was early work from Greg Rucka. In fact, it was his first comics work about a federal marshal who discovers a murder in Antarctica and winds up having to work in these tough conditions, and beautiful art by Steve Lieber. It's a fantastic book that I think a lot of people maybe don't know about now. Shirtless Bear Fighter gets collected. Shirtless Bear Fighter is awesome. It is called by is it Slate? A Ray of Harry Sunshine in a Bleak Shirt-Filled World.
Nice. It's nice work.
Suicide Squad Volume 7 almost completes the John Ostrander Suicide Squad run. This is some of my favorite stuff where the squad was out of costume, operating in sort of espionage.
Going up against a Japanese equivalent super team.
They go up against the Yakuza. One of my favorite moments between communist superhero Gort or supervillain Gort and Deadshot.
Yep. I know the scene.
Yeah, it's so good. It reintroduces the Atom. There's sort of the Suicide Squad version of the Atom. It's also got the goofy story of Dr. Light being resurrected by the devil. There's all kinds of crazy stuff in this one. It is some of my favorite Suicide Squad stuff. Suicide Squad is one of my favorite titles, which means this is one of my favorite graphic novels. And I'm glad to finally have collected.
Yep.
Doctor Strange Volume 1 is a hardcover that collects the first 12 issues, I think, of... first 10 issues, and then Last Days of Magic one-shot by Jason Aaron, Chris Piccolo, and a few other artists. And then finally, Junji Ito has a new hardcover, which is a cause for celebration for us.
Yeah, it's kind of a curated tales from him, his sort of best of, with notes from him after each story.
Yeah, and it's called Shiver.
Yes.
Although it's weird, it's not a Christmas themed, it's more of a Halloween themed, but it's late.
Yeah, you know, it's for Junji Ito, it's always Halloween.
Time. Even if he's just doing cat comics.
Even if it's cat comics.
That's a lot of stuff. Dave, what else you got in your stack?
Let's see. From this week, I actually didn't get around to reading it, but I wanted to mention the Barbarella comic. It's a weird thing to perhaps see. I think most of us just know it as that campy 60s sci-fi movie with Jane Fonda naked. But if I'm not mistaken, it was originally a French comic before it became a sci-fi movie. So this is really kind of it coming full circle. Mike Carey is writing it.
I was going to say.
So that's sort of notable. And I imagine it will at the very least be worth a look. It is not just a TNA fest. In fact, it's notably far from that, I would say. The Star Trek Next Generation Mirror Broken series has its fifth issue. Very, very good issue.
Conclusion, right?
Is it the conclusion?
I thought there was the ending.
One more issue.
I don't know where they'd be going.
You're right.
It feels like the end.
It has a the end question mark sort of thing on the end, which you're right. It does sort of have a resolution. This is kind of a big action issue.
Yeah. I liked it. Did you like it?
Yeah, I did. It's the, you know, it had they had previously broken out the starship, and then the last issue, after they stole the Enterprise, last issue they had to deal with some fallout from that, and this they have to kind of really put it through its paces.
Yeah.
There's Cardassians gunning for them, and like Romulans, and the Federation themselves, or the Empire as they call it, the Star Empire, are like pissed that they got their ship stolen, and in the middle of it all, Picard has to kind of try and figure out a way to survive and come out on top, and it's an interesting resolution with lots of cool stuff in it.
I want more of this world. I like it.
Yeah, it's very cool. I enjoy the character relationships they've established are all interesting.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see where they go, so yeah. At the same time, I like that this was such a good standalone series, and you know, if they made an ongoing, I think they'd screw it up. So I just wanted to do the occasional miniseries with it.
Yeah, another miniseries would be great.
DC does, in fact, have their holiday special 2017, which has a really fun framing story where the Superman's biggest fan, the big palooka, like, Bibbo. Sailor Bibbo, is at his bar. And John Constantine is in there harshing his good times with his cynical British talk.
Yep.
when also Clark Kent wanders into the bar to kind of in a melancholy mood as he tries to sort of reflects on some failings. And Bibbo tries to cheer him up, which is kind of the framing device for a variety of stories, which had some very good talent on it. I always feel like I kind of want the stories to have a little bit more depth. Like, I wish they were almost a little longer.
Yeah, they're all like 4 or 5 pages.
But there's some good stuff in there, including like a Francesco Francavilla doing like a Sergeant Rock story.
That was fun.
Phil Hester actually working on a Green
Phil
Arrow.
Hester doing Green Arrow
that
again.
One was really good. The Green Arrow Black Canary story was fun.
Yeah,
there's a Denny O'Neill and
Steve Epting. Yeah.
Batman. That's really good. It's a little dark.
Yeah.
That's a weird one for Bibbo to start with.
Yeah. Although they almost... That was just a framing device, and I didn't particularly get the impression that he was, like, telling these tales. It'd be hilarious if he was, like, a crypt keeper.
Yeah.
This next one is gonna knock you out, kid.
If they, like, pan back for a page, they need to collect, and he's like, that doesn't help at all, Bibbo. Keep going.
Sorry, buddy. And I noticed, I think this is the... Is this the one that Harlan Ellison wrote? The kind of the...
yeah, this is, like, the classic Harlan Ellison one.
Yeah. Anyway... Fun little special.
I'm always skeptical of these big, like, $8 or whatever it is special. Maybe 10.
This one's 10.
It's a big special. It's a lot of stories. I'm always skeptical, but I really liked a lot of those. I thought those were it's a really good
The amount of
special.
Talent involved in this one is... Yeah. Sometimes I feel like they sort of do it almost as their new talent story sort of stuff.
No, this is all notable people.
Some, yeah, for real dudes. The second Batman Ninja Turtles miniseries is out with, I think, the same creative team as the first that had the really nice painted artwork from that guy, Freddie Williams.
Yep.
James Tinian writes. From what I read up on it, the plot has Bane ultimately, like, coming through to the Turtles world and trying to, like, unite the gangs of New York, which sounded like a cool premise.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to check it out. I see Damian's on the cover, so Damian's obviously going to kick some ass, too, and probably fight some Turtles. And lastly, on the holiday tip, I wanted to mention from Valiant, the Faith Winter Wonderland special. It had been a little bit since I looked it on Faith, and this was a fun sort of Christmas special that had to do with, like, a childhood cartoon she watched based on Alice in Wonderland, and kind of not unlike the Claus thing intersecting with reality and her kind of getting drawn into it. It reminded me a little bit of those Chris Claremont things, like the Kitty's fairy tale storyline.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was fun. So that is it for me. Nick, anything left?
I have one more to add. Batman White Knight number 3. Sean Murphy is kind of out of continuity, reversal of roles as Joker becomes good-ish.
And Batman becomes
we watch,
bad-ish.
Batman sort of spiraling out of control.
That is a beautiful cover of classic Harley back-to-back with kind of Roller Girl Harley.
Yeah, that was sort of the reveal of the second issue. And if you're a Harley fan, I definitely think you might want to check this out because Sean Murphy has decided that there have been two Harleys.
Yeah, in this world... it's
Harley
like...
Quinzel basically realized the Joker didn't really... was basically fawning all over Batman and kind of only getting...
didn't really care about her the way he cared about Batman.
Yeah, so she left.
But it's like, as if for the last few years in DC, classic Harley was literally not Harley.
And there's another woman stepped in, and she does have a name. I'm forgetting it. But she became the new Harley Quinn and kind of the Roller Girl.
The way you explained it, it's like the Joker doesn't even really notice because he's so into himself or whatever. I wonder, is she going to, like, is classic Harley going to kill new Harley?
We haven't seen that confrontation.
Like, I always see fans talking about how much they like classic Harley and how much they hate any sort of sexed up versions.
Yeah.
Even though they've done a pretty good job and they've kind of Deadpooled her up a little bit.
Yeah.
But they've also, she does well for DC there. I wonder what would happen if they did this in the real world, you know, kind of reveal the classic Harley's comeback.
Yeah. I don't think it would go well. I think people like new Harley.
Maybe so. It does. Suicide Squad movie Harley, like, launched a million costumes, I'm sure, cosplay things.
Yep.
But it is kind of interesting to see a writer, artist, get to playing around with that idea. Clearly, I imagine. Did you get the vibe, Nick, that he was like such a fan of the classic Harley that he kind of wanted to work this in so he could kind of take some shots at the current one?
And it's not a comic, but I do want to point out that DC is changing up their kind of
their corner box logos.
Yeah. And I have to say, the new ones are fantastic. They're dropping the Rebirth from basically
the banner that had been on there for like a year and a half or something.
Over two, I think.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
And they're changing up new corner box. Every comic has their own logo, which I love.
Yeah, the logo design is really neat looking. It's got like the DC Bullet. It says DC Universe specifically. Yep. That's how they're kind of conceptualizing it. And then there's the price and the number and the logo below it, which will have like I'm sure like an arrow for Green Arrow and so on.
Yeah.
That is one thing that DC really has over Marvel right now is their design stuff. Like, fighting the prices on Marvel Comics is a damn nightmare.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whenever we're saying, and this is something that most people, like fans, don't notice it, but like when I'm ringing stuff up, I always can find DC prices really easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said that, and I hadn't quite thought about that, but then Nick happened to flip to a Marvel comic,
yeah,
and
I was like, oh, it's not there.
Where is the price? I actually can't find it.
Yeah, you know what I noticed it? It's when our computer was down, and I had to look for the price.
Oh, man. No. Why you bring back sad days?
I think it's a good change. I want to commend DC for it.
It's a neat little visual change.
Yep. All right, that's it for comics. We'll be back in just a second to talk about a podcast and a board game. All right, you guys have discovered another new podcast.
Yep. No, more accurately, Nick has discovered, because Nick watches like a hawk.
I don't watch like a hawk.
No, you watch like a hawk. You never stop talking about podcast ratings.
Every couple of weeks, I look in at the top.
You're obsessed.
Apparently so.
No, but you do like, there's like a, I don't even like, is it through iTunes?
Yeah, it's iTunes.
Yeah, they just post their top 10 most watched or whatever. Yeah, podcasts. And you occasionally take notice of the new rankings, the what stuff that's popped, and it's
always some Pod Save America, one of their new podcasts that they continually spawn, and then there was this one.
Right, this is just entitled Slow Burn, a podcast about Watergate,
which
you'll never guess what it's about.
I mean, it's about Watergate, and that's actually one of those kind of bits of history I don't know a ton about. I mean, I know the big hits.
I think everybody thinks they know about the basics, is that Nixon sent in some burglars to bust in and, like, bug the DNC's, what is it, their hotel?
Their campaign headquarters.
Yeah. Right. But there's so many details about it and about how it actually transpired and was discovered and covered up and, you know, how it took a while to get out.
Yeah.
And here's the interesting thing about this podcast. This sounds like this would be some kind of ponderous thing, but it's a brisk. The first episode, which I just watched,
it's like
or
listened
to, 25 minutes, 25. Or a little bit less, and comes at it from an interesting perspective. I think they're not like, at no point are they like, let us tell you the history of Watergate from beginning to end. No, instead, they pick a person. This person is Martha Mitchell, who was the kind of conservative, gossiping,
she was an actress.
Socialite, an actress, like, well-liked but very opinionated, like, and a huge gossip hound.
Yeah.
Who was married to, what, Nixon's former attorney general, was it?
I believe that's correct.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. And they talk about how she would, like, and the whole story is told through her eyes, because they begin by mentioning how she was essentially, when she started finding out about this, held prisoner for several days.
Like,
she tried to
literally.
Tried to call a friend, and somebody barged in, and like an FBI guy like yanked the phone cord out of the wall and like knocked her to the ground.
That is crazy.
And ended up becoming this kind of like, even though she would like go on talk shows like, was it like Dick Cavett and stuff like that, and talk about how much she hated liberals. She had that Southern accent, and she reminded me a little bit of like, our own liberal, Ann Richards.
Yeah, a little bit,
in the
actually,
sense that she sounded
that.
Like she could play a crowd.
Okay.
You know, she had that charm, some Southern charm going on. And she hated liberals, but she did not like her husband getting caught up in this dirty politics.
Didn't like Nixon all that much.
Did not like Nixon. And this is kind of the story of how she kind of started some dominoes tipping.
I was going to say, I think one of my favorite lines is the Nixon line.
Oh,
about,
man.
this never would have come to life if it wasn't for the... It was like a Scooby-Doo line.
Oh, yeah. He's like, if it hadn't been for that Martha.
Yeah. I'm like... Oh my gosh, he actually said
that. He literally said that, and this was like 2 years after Watergate had broken.
That's great.
And it comes across as so scummy, too,
yeah.
Because
completely.
He's saying, like, well, if only Bob or whatever her husband was, like, if he had kept his house in order.
Yeah.
Clearly, like, he needed to leash her,
yeah.
Like, what you hear in his voice. And,
it's insane.
It's insane. Yeah,
but
I suppose it's a reminder that that heroes can come out of anywhere.
Yeah, but I feel like this is going to be a continuing podcast looking at the events of Watergate through kind of
through this unique
unusual
sort of
eyes.
Lens. Yeah, that only the second episode I think only hit a couple days ago. I haven't listened to it yet.
I haven't either yet.
But I like how brisk it is. Like this is definitely not the farthest thing from ponderous.
Yeah,
they fill it with that. You actually like hear interviews with her, so you get a sense for kind of like. Her particular brand of charm, and it's narrated with some wit and zip.
I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely a good start.
I think the only problem is the events of Watergate, of course, have no relevance to our modern day.
I have no idea why you would even think that they would.
I don't know how you plug it in. That's the only problem.
Their host does, in fact, of course, talk about their relevance, and the wonder like. Oh, what does it feel like to live amongst such a scandalous time?
Yeah.
I don't know how... I don't know where we would even get that.
I don't know what it's like.
That was actually another interesting thing.
The guy
thing.
He brings up as the corollary?
Well, that, but also sort of people were kind of flocked to... looking for Watergate news as it was unfolding.
Right. Like, oh yeah, like it's been searched for all over, like, you know, like so much more than normal.
Yeah. It was just... There were some interesting things that I did not know, and I think that's... That's cool. I like the...
Right, right. I was telling my mom about this while I was visiting with her the other day, and she knew who this woman was from the time, and she'd lived through Watergate.
Yep.
But I played her a little bit and showed her one or two excerpts, and she was like, her jaw was on the floor with some of the stuff that's actually happened in this, because she's like, oh, I didn't know about this. I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
They mentioned, was it Anthony Scaramucci?
Yep.
As a little bit of not like in any way a literal analog to this one.
Right.
But just in the sense of like, if you were to look back at the present time at just like his, 10 days or whatever that he was in office, that there's, you would probably get a pretty, you could gain an interesting window into the entire Trump administration through that, and probably increasingly so as we see how things play out in the next several months.
Yeah.
It's like play out by day, every single day.
My God, yeah. Anyway, so.
I definitely recommend the podcast.
Slow Burn, a podcast about Watergate.
I just want to quick mention a game that I played this weekend. Played, in addition to playing the new DC deck building Confrontation, which was a really fun variation on that game that we all really like.
Yep.
I played the cooperative firefighting game from Fireside Games, the guys who do Castle Panic, they're Austin based. They do a game called Hot Shots, which is about sort of wildfire fighting. So it's not like Flashpoint where you're like fighting to stop fire in a building. You're like smoke jumpers. You have different abilities, like you have a spotter who can like see two cards instead of just one and that kind of thing. But you're trying to prevent these fires from engulfing an area that's like a little tile-based map, and the fires, the flames, little plastic flames, which are actually really cool components.
Uh-huh.
And you're sort of trying to put out the fires before the wind shifts, and put up fire blocks, and that kind of thing. It's a dice-based sort of push-your-luck game.
Did you say fully cooperative?
It's fully cooperative.
Okay.
It's 2 to 4 players.
Does like in the tradition of co-op games, do you have something that's like, this is the unique thing about my guy or whatever?
Yeah, like I said, I had the spotter who could read two cards.
Uh-huh. And does that like, okay, that's what yours was. I was wondering if it was dice powers.
Somebody else, I can't remember what her character was that she had, because I don't know if I know the name, but they could pull someone with them to the place they were at.
Uh-huh.
And when you do that, you get an additional dice roll because you have backup.
Oh, interesting.
It's
a neat
mechanic. So, yeah, it was a fun co-op game. I definitely recommend it. And if people like Castle Panic and some of the other Fireside games, or Bears, their dice game.
I definitely want to check this out.
Give it a shot. That's Hot Shots. And I think that's it for us this week.
Yep.
We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo-Jo!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.